Welcome to Headlines. This is David Lichtenstein. This week we'll have a really wonderful show. I think they're all wonderful. We have Rabbi David Ozeri, and he will be speaking about a topic that really has put the whole Agudah convention on fire. Are we paying our Rabbeim enough? I think we all know the answer to that. We will also have Rabbi Nachum Eisenstein from Eretz Yisrael, excerpts of a conversation with him, where he will be speaking about reporting molesters to the police. He was the Mashbak, Mishamish Bekaidish, Barabal Yashiv, Zechon Lavracha, the Rashke Bahag. We will also have this week the noted Askin, Rav Tzvi Gluck of Amudim. He's Askin Ben Askin, fascinating discussion with him. And we will have at the end a cameo, small 4 minutes of select pieces of an interview with Reb David Cohn. So this is really a great show. Before we start, I just wanted to mention a number of things. I've gotten a lot of emails about our discussion that we had about the Torah that we had with Rabbi Meiselman of Eretz Yisrael. And I would almost like to set aside a separate 15-minute segment to go through the emails back and forth, a lot of controversy it created. And also about the Clinton event, which we'll do this both at a later show. We'll go through readers' emails. And you will notice that I read the absolute most antagonistic ones. I read them mila b'mila because I really believe, like Rabbi Yochanan, li'ayla me'amarti dava v'chsarti l'acharai, if you can say something and you have to look over your shoulder fearfully, that means you really shouldn't be saying it. So I think that the positions we take, then not everybody agrees with them, but at least we should be able to speak about them with conviction and force that it's Alpi Torah. So we'll do that in 2 weeks from now. We'll go through both of those emails, and I welcome you to send in any you want to info@headlines.com. So let's discuss. I would like to go to one email that I did get that was relevant to last show, and that was from really an outstanding Talmud Chacham in Lakewood by the name of Rabbi Obstfeld, Rabbi Shmuel Obstfeld, and he sent me an email about the concept that we discussed last week about Ben Pekua, where we had Rabbi Rabbi from Australia who wanted to propose that the busser of a Ben Pekua would be Parv. And he says he went into Rabbi Moshe Sternbach and he nodded to it. We disagreed with both his raya that he brought from the Meshech Chacham, and we couldn't imagine that Rav Moshe Sternbach would say. So this outstanding young Talmud Chacham brought a raya of Farashi Gemara in Chulin, Daf Kuf Yud Gimel Eis, Yud Gimel Amid Beis. It's quite technical, but suffice to say that the way he's learning Pshat and the Gemara, and I believe he's correct, as well as the Rambam in Hilchos Mechalos Asuris, Halacha Vav and Halacha Zayin, it's Muchach from the Gemara, from the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, that a Ben Pekua would be Fleishiks, which makes his proposal that he's reading that way in the Meshech Chachma, which we seriously disagreed with, really puts it to, makes it a moot point. So if anybody's interested in hearing these details, I will be glad. Send me an email, and I'll forward you the tshuva that this outstanding young man sent on the topic. But it is clearly, both in Shulchan Aruch and the Gemara, would not be parv. So I'd like to just say a small thought on the parshas we're going through. These are the weeks of Cheirus. This week is Kriyas Yamsuf. So I have just a really wonderful thought I'd like to share with you. The first three mitzvahs given to Klal Yisrael as an Uma, post they, you know, leaving Mitzrayim, at the time of leaving Mitzrayim, were HaChodesh HaZalachem, the concept of the new moon, Karban Pesach, and Matzah. So listen to this thought. Here is a story about a CEO, we're leaving slavery. Why are these the first three mitzvahs? So the Sipurnu says, because as a slave, time is meaningless to you. Now that you're free, the time is yours. And I want to extend that to mean, make sure you don't substitute the slavery of Egypt, forced servitude, to elective servitude, where we become slaves through our own volition. And here's a story. This is a CEO of a Fortune 500 company who was retiring. In honor of the event, the company threw a huge dinner, black tie affair, officers, executives, directors, the whole D&O policy was there, and their spouses. The CEO got up and he said, I know many of you want my job, but if you want it, you have to be ready to pay the price. Let me tell you about my job. My daughter was recently married. At the wedding, I looked around and I realized I didn't recognize any of her friends. I don't know what books she reads. I don't know what she likes and what she doesn't like. In short, I don't know my daughter. So if you want my job, you have to pay the price. That's the price. Do you think it's worth it? And with that, he sat down. He had done a Faustian bargain. He had replaced one type of servitude with another. I want to tell you that a CEO went to the funeral of his mother, and he saw somebody who was crying bitterly, and he went over to her, and he said, "Who are you that you're so touched?" She said, "Oh, I'm this woman's best friend. Who are you?" That's replacing one type of slavery. So the first slavery don't accept is man. Don't serve the clock. Don't become a slave. The second type of slavery, the next two mitzvahs are, by the Karban Pesach, it says, etzem loy sish berubay, don't suck out the marrow. Don't eat when it's bloody, rare, and delicious. How many people have a different type of slavery? It's called addiction. It could be addiction to food. It could be addiction to alcohol, pornography, gambling, the pleasures, the good things in life. And you know what? They start out as servants, but they end up as masters. People become addicts. All these things that they want could be drugs, and ultimately, they consume. And you know who this happened with? Paray. Paray was addicted to power, and he was willing to see his entire nation get consumed by animals, by arbe, by blood, famine, anything. He just couldn't let go of that power. He was addicted to it. He couldn't, that rush. Are we addicted to food, alcohol, or any of the other things? Or are we really free? So the Torah says, you're going free. Stay free. Don't accept a different master through your own volition. And what's the list? And the greatest slavery that we see in our lifetime all the time is matzah, ego. How many people live their entire lives, what does this one say about me? How many children do you know that say, I couldn't do this, gepasnish, my parents were worried what the neighbors would say, what this neighbor. It's a type of a slavery. Dr. Pelkowitz told me an amazing story. He said he remembers counseling somebody who told him that in the 1950s, when air conditioning became popular in cars, they couldn't afford air conditioning. So the entire summer they lived with all their windows closed, and when their father drove the car in 100-degree weather, they had to drive with the windows in the car closed so that people would think that the car was air-conditioned. And why does Gucci and Louis Vuitton, and why do people wear these labels outside on their clothing? Because we are slaves to the affirmation of other people, what others think about this. The Rambam writes, this is the Chet of Adam Rishon, by the way. This is the Garm of the Chet of Adam Rishon. So this is a type of slavery. This is the last powerful slavery. Wouldn't it be wonderful to be free, not slave to the clock or to hedonism, gluttony, and most of all, not to others' opinions? That was the gift we got. This is the week of Cheirus. Let's try to re-embrace those values. You're listening to us on WMCA, or that's 570, or WMCA.com. Or you may be listening to us on the Nachum Segal Network. That's at NachumSegal.com. And we're also on Nachum Segal at 11 a.m. Monday mornings. We are also on WSNR 620 a.m. at 7 p.m. That's drive time, fabulous time, on Tuesday evening. We have the honor of having on the phone with us Rav David Ozeri, who's the Rav of Congregation Yad Yosef in Brooklyn, New York. Welcome, Rabbi Ozeri.
Thank you.
So, Rabbi Ozeri, by the Agudah Convention, you hit upon a chord about paying Rabbeim and how we don't pay Rabbeim enough, I'm not sure if your point was that it affects the education or it's just a Rachmanis on the Rabbeim. Could you tell the Olam what exactly was your point?
My point is, number one, our rabbis are not getting their due, and it's a rachmanis on them, And Memela, in turn, it's a Rachmanis on the Talmidim. Because how could a Rebbe properly function in a classroom when he can't support his family, when he can't make ends meet? If a Rebbe can support his family, then he could concentrate more on his Talmidim. I received an email from a Rebbe, I don't know who he is, and the email went something like this. Thank you for allowing us to now concentrate on our Talmidim rather than on our turnoff notices. And this is what's been going on for years and years. And it's long overdue that the Rebbe should receive a proper parnasa. They're not asking to become rich. They're not asking for luxuries, just so that they should be able to pay their bills.
So, Rabbi Zeri, what inspired you to speak about this topic?
The truth is, it's been bothering me for years. I, for many years, worked in the yeshiva, and I was involved with the finances of the yeshiva. And there were times where their pay would be delayed by 2 or 3 weeks. You could see the pain on every Rebbe, especially when the Rebbe would have a simcha. He would be making a wedding, and that simcha would turn into an absolute nightmare. And the Rebbe would have to turn to so many places to beg and borrow to make his daughter's or his son's most simple chasana. It's going on for a long time. And I told them a story at the Aguda convention about when I was a young boy, 11, 12 years old, and I used to run the old mimeograph machine in the office of the yeshiva. And one day while I was running the machine, a Rebbe walked in, and the Rebbe turned to the administrator. I was standing right there, and he said to the administrator, I know I'm not getting paid this month, and it's before Yontif, but could I have $5 from my salary to purchase a lulav and esrog? $5. These are tzaddikim, these people.
So, Rav Lazeri, are you speaking out a din of kedima and tzedakah, priority in tzedakah? Are you speaking out karas hatayv? Are you just speaking bein adam l'chaveri?
Let's go. Oh, let's make a little chazara on what the Peleo Etz said about this. The Peleo Etz is under the heading of Melamdei Tinokot. He writes the following. He talks all about the Melamed and who the Melamed is. And he writes, V'yismach b'talmidav ba'olam hazeh, v'yagel bahem le'olam haba, she'en simcha ba'olam gedolam mizu. There's no greater simcha than a Rebbe who has talmidim. Ben ba'olam hazeh, ben ba'olam haba. And he goes on, and he writes the following. V'gam tzirichim lefkoach enehem alehem. We, as a community, have to open up our eyes to these rabbeim. Latet lahem parnasatam, to give them their pranasa, whatever they're lacking, b'mezumanim, in cash, le'yadam, into the hands, mide shavua b'shavua, weekly. And then he goes on and he writes, v'lo yahashu al hotza'a meruba, don't worry about this great expense, ki gedola mitzvazu yoter mebinyan bet hamikdash, greater is this mitzvah than binyan bet hamikdash. And this mitzvah is capable of saving us from every tzara v'tzuka. And we will be left with a beracha.
So, Rabbi Zeri, so here's the question that I've been asked, and I would pass it on. Like, you know, somebody tells me, he says, you know, I make a dollar. 50% of it goes to the government. Then when I go buy something, I'm left with 42 cents because I have sales tax of 8 cents. He says, so, and then when I have my rent, he says, my house, I'm paying real estate taxes, which is another 10%. I'm left with 32%. So in the real estate taxes is schar melamdim, you know, public school, etc., which we don't use. So his question to me was, he says, David, he says, everybody wants to pay the melamdim more, but there's just not that much money to go around. So what else do we cut to pay for it?
So
and I know, Rabbi Zeri, I know that there are wealthy people who go on long vacations and on cruises, etc. But the Hamoinam is not this way. So the question is, which do we push off the plate? Do we say we're not going to support a kollel, or there's only a certain amount? So what do we cut? It has to come out of the budget someplace. Who do we push off the plate because of the melamdim?
Okay, so I'd like to go back to your original statement. They're telling you that if they make a dollar, 50 cents goes to taxes. My little knowledge of economics in this country is they're only taking 50 cents off the dollar if you're making over $250,000 a year. So not many, the people that you're talking about aren't making $250,000, and they're not taking 50 cents out of their pocket. That's number one. Number two, it has been proven in the last 5-6 weeks since the Aguda convention that the money is out there. Why do I say this? Because there have been numerous yeshivas throughout the country that all of a sudden they are giving raises. They got their balabatim together and they said, we have to do something, and they did it. I received the Ochos Chaim gave every Rebbe a $10,000 raise. Now, okay, not every yeshiva is Ochos Chaim. I got a phone call from a yeshiva last week who they told me that they haven't given a raise in 8 years, and they're from the lowest paying yeshivas. They got together some balabat, and they rolled up their sleeves, and they raised $500,000. They're giving every one of their rabbeim $10,000. It doesn't necessarily have to fall on that person who has nothing less at the end of the month. But the money is out there, and if you can't give the money, then get the money.
No, but where does it come from? There's only so much in the bucket. It's a little bit like, you know, Bernie Sanders, we're going to educate everybody. It has to come from someplace. Which other bucket of tzedakah, of tzarchei tzibur, are we going to reduce to pay for melamdim?
Again, I believe that melamdim are a priority.
I agree with
an
you.
An absolute priority. And like you said, it's not in hilchot tzedakah, it's in halachot melamdim.
It's the chiyuv of limadata ma'isim es b'neichem,
right? Yes. And like the story that I told about Rav Shmuel Misalant, who when there was a little a young Yosem running around town playing, having a good time, and Rav Shmuel Misalant got a hold of him, and he said, he took him to the Gaboyim of the town, and he said, why is this boy running around? Why doesn't he have a Malamed? And they said, we have no money in the community chest to pay for a Malamed for him. So Rav Shmuel Misalant told him, sell the Sefer Torah. They said, we only have one Sefer Torah. He says, so what? This is a mitzvah d'oraita to teach this child Torah. Kiryat HaTorah, Monday, Thursday, and Shabbat is d'rabanan. Sell the Sefer Torah. I mean, if that doesn't say it all, what is it?
And I want to, let me tell you, you know, I could share with you many, you know, stories I saw. I don't know if it was with Rav Abramsky. It could have been.
Yes.
But when his mother died, he cried bitterly. So somebody said to him, "What you seem to have such deep feelings for your mother." So he said, "When I was a little a boy, we didn't have money for a malamed. So my mother sold the oven in the house, so that my father should be able to hire a malamed for me.
Yes.
And she wasn't able to cook, bake, or heat the house the entire winter, so that I should have a malamed.
Yes.
So we recognize that Al Tzkal Yisrael, there's nothing bigger than. But my question still comes back to so." It's, I guess, do we personally, each of us, have to decide what other tzedakah we cut for this? Is it a personal decision?
Again, this, if everybody understands the importance of this, I believe that they will find the money. I read an essay from Rav Schwab, how Rav Schwab said that 1 year we should do away with the Pesach hotel and do our rabbis what is do our rabbeim. The money is out there. The question is what is our priorities? What is our priorities? Yes, there are a lot of gevirim out there, and yes, there are a lot of people struggling out there. But each person has his priority. A man came to my home a few days after the drasha, a total stranger. And he said to me, I'm not a rich man, but I want you to know that I sent my child's Rebbe $500 yesterday, because now I realize the importance and the chashivus.
So, Rav Ozeri, Would it be fair to say that the crux of your point is that the gravamen of your point is the ikkar is that we are not being adequately aware of what the rabbeim give to us? I mean, you know, it's so often you would have somebody and you say, "Have you ever met your son's rabbi?" And he'll say, "No."
Yeah.
And you would say, "Let me ask you a question. Would you lend money to somebody who you never met?" And I would say, "Mishigabistu."
Right. So you say, you give him your child.
But your child you would give him.
Yes.
So is it fair to say that your main point is our most precious things that we have are our children? And we give them over and we disrespect, we don't adequately respect the people who we give our most precious things in our life, our whole nitzchiyus to. And they should have priority over many of the other spending, be it a Pesach program or be it tzedakis, like aniyei Eretz Yisrael. Your children, rabbeim, should come first. Would I be misrepresenting your point if I said that?
Can I answer that with the Rambam?
Yes.
The Rambam says, we are obligated to place melamdim in every city. Any city that does not have a melamed for the children, excommunicate the city people till they put in melamdim. And if they still don't do it, destroy the city. Drama. Why? Because the world only exists on the utterance of these children learning Torah. So now you tell me, should it be number one priority? These children that are uttering Torah are keeping up the world. It's the rabbeim that are teaching them Torah. So ultimately the rabbeim are holding up the world.
I think that's beautiful. Could I be meisif onto what
you're
saying then?
Please.
Is it possible that when we daven in a shul and we give this person shlishi and this person shishi, maybe the people who live the most modest way and sacrifice their lives for the things that are most precious to us, our children, maybe besides the money, we should also be mechabed them?
Of course.
Are we mechabed them, correct?
Of course, absolutely. I said it over clearly. I described to them who their children's Rebbe is, and I told them, your child's Rebbe is a gifted tzaddik. He has fortified most pleasures of this world to teach your child Torah. A brilliant mind sacrificing to live on a minimal salary.
And Chazal call him, it says, call him a kabel pnei rabbi, kilu makabel pnei
shechina.
Right?
Yes.
The Gemara in Yerushalmi and Erevin. Yes. He has the din of the shechina lanes. He says, why aren't we putting their payment as a priority, and why aren't we putting their covet as a priority?
Absolutely. Can I read you a medrash that Rav Steinman told over to people who asked them what they should do with their Hanukkah geld this year? Can I read you this medrash?
Absolutely.
The medrash is the following. Mi natan schar sofrim velo natati lo ben? Is there somebody who gives schar to malamdim and I won't give them a child? V'hainu da'al yedeh she'adam meshanem schar le'melamed kedeh she'ilmad im yeled aher Torah. Somebody who gives money to a melamed to teach a child Torah, hu zocheh gamken lechibuk ben be'atzmo. He will also be zoicha to hug a child himself. Wait. Ve'etzazu, now that's the end of the medrash. And it says over here that this etzah, Rav Steinman gives to people who lo aleinu don't have children, right? And we have seen that they were zoicha to have children after that.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Rav David Ozeri, for bringing out such a poignant, valuable point that has so been forgotten by so many parents. Like the Mesil Susharim says, the greatest things are often the most simplest things, that people forget about. And thank you very much.
Yes.
May the merit of all these malamdim be to you and your family.
Amen. I'd just like to say one thing. Since we brought this to the attention of Klal Yisrael, it is amazing how many people have come forward either to volunteer, to give money, to do whatever they could do. Yisrael. And the momentum has not stopped. It's only growing, and it's growing all over the country, to the credit of Klal Yisrael. Never did they not step up to the plate when needed. And this is a great need, and in Yirtzeh Hashem, we'll reach our goal.
Thank you so much.
Thank
Rabbi
you. Zari. Thank you. Kol tov.
So our next guest is Rabbi Nachum Eisenstein. This is actually a continuation of an interview that we had with him that we did not get a chance to play. And he's going to speak about reporting molesters to the police. So let's go back to our interview. What is your opinion about the in America there's been a lot to do about molestation. Does somebody go to the police or do they go to a Rav? And Rabbi David Cohn has been very outspoken. He says he's seen many cases. I personally, I had a boy by my house where the boy committed suicide. He was molested, and a year later he committed suicide. And he spoke about it by the Shabbos table rather unemotionally. The next year I heard he overdosed and he died. And he says, Drabbanim don't have a clue as to the damage. So, you know, they come out by the good and they say, we're going to make a Bez Din of Rabbanim. Well, it's years later. It doesn't exist. So it's like there's a fire burning and they're saying, we're going to, you should go ask. There's going to be a Bez Din. I mean, if somebody's dying, that's not the attitude you take. So Rabbi David Cohn says, it's Pikuach Nefesh. These people are Reidfim. They never do one. They're repeat offenders, right? He said, nobody eats one potato chip. These people, then there's no such a thing as a molester who does it once. He says, you know it's true. You pick up the phone, you call the police, and he says they should be put in jail for life because they're recidivists. What's your opinion about that?
So, first of all, there's a written tshuva from Rav Yosef written to the Gaon Raphael Cohn.
I saw the tshuva. I'm familiar with the tshuva. And I have
the tshuva is being misquoted.
Well, I saw the tshuva b'ksav. I didn't see a quote. I saw the tshuva, yeah, okay, and he quotes it on the Rajba. He quotes the Rajba in Shin Pei Ches, but
the people are misquoting the tshuva. And besides the tshuva, I have the exclusive of hearing firsthand from Rav Yosef. Unfortunately, this issue came up not once and not twice. Rav Yosef holds that there has to be a very strong umdana to accuse a person, like you say, to put him in jail for the rest of his life. Unless you know 100% that there's an umdina, there has to be an umdina in the muchach, not just a reglaim ladover, there has to be an umdina in the muchach that there's basis. Otherwise, we know there's cases of unfortunate cases that if people went to jail, and found out afterwards that the whole thing was a mistake.
Let me respond. In I spoke to a very prominent doctor who deals with this, and he says, contrary to popular opinion, when somebody goes to the authority, they're for the most part disinterested, and unless the police find strong evidence, they're not even interested in taking the case because they're lazy. So it's not like somebody says, oh, I heard a rumor. You go to the police and a SWAT team comes down and arrests the person. He says, you go to the police. If you're lucky, you'll get them interested. If they're interested, they launch an investigation. If they find strong evidence, they'll arrest the person. So he said the entire concept that there's, like in the movies, a SWAT team waiting for a phone call, let's go attack the person. He said it's a myth. It's not true.
Okay, assuming what this person is saying is true.
This is Dr. Wurzberger, a prominent doctor.
I can't argue with him because I really don't have any first-hand information. But let me just comment on one of the things you just said. That if the police, let's say the police got involved, and the police feel that there's a strong case, that then they'll deal with it and put the person in jail. Who are the police to decide whether there's a strong case?
Who should decide?
The police have the demonis to fulfill what the requirement of Rav Yosef, there should be umdin in the muchach.
When the police see a Jew
coming and they can have a chance, you know better than me, you're living in America, when they can cap a Jew and put him in jail.
There's no racism, there's no anti-Semitism in these matters. They don't look at it in that regard here. It's very apolitical.
I hope what you're saying is true, but again, there was a basin set up. There was a basin set up in the East Coast with Chosh Rabbanah. I was even asked to join the Beis Din for a certain cases, a few cases I was involved with. And reluctantly, I accepted to do it under certain conditions. However, the accusers refused to come to the Beis Din. They refused to come to the Beis Din. They refused to cooperate. If the Beis Din would have decided that there's reglaim l'dover, more than reglaim, there's umdin and amuchach according to the requirements of Rav Yosef, then the Beis Din
his lashon is reglaim l'dover in his tshuva.
Yeah, I know, but he meant more. He told me it has to be umdin and amuchach. It's not just, and again,
I mean, what aktanim? What did Rabbi Yashiv Neman aktanim would be Neman or no?
Very problematic.
But you have a Shoyal Umeshiv who says Ktanim Aneman. The Ramah says that Ktanim Aneman. And it only happens to Ktanim for the most part. So if Ktanim aren't Neman, what chance do we have?
I did not say that Ktanim are not Neman. I said it's problematic. There has to be a Chakir and a Drisha. And it has to be done by Nemanim. And afterwards, there should be mechoshev, an experienced rabbanim who know how to deal with this situation.
But Reb Nachum, I want to ask you: why are you being machmir on the life of the roidif? Why aren't we looking out to be machmir on the hatzala of the nirduf, knowing a few facts? One, 99% of these cases, children don't accuse adults of molesting them. It's just foreign, and psychologists will tell you, a child does not come to his father and say, so-and-so did that to me, my Rebbe. It's just strange. A child doesn't do that. Child does not. So in the vast majority, it's true. The vast majority of molesters have multiple cases. I mean, this fellow Mandrewitz had hundreds of children he molested. Why aren't we being machmir? You know, they came to Reb Chaim and they said, why are you so mekil in Hilchos Shabbos? He said, I'm not being mekil in Hilchos Shabbos. I'm being machmer on Pikuach Nefesh. Why are we not being machmer?
It was Gabi Yom Kippur.
Okay, but why aren't we being machmer knowing that it's the Pikuach Nefesh and the children very often commit suicide? And we have people like Yanky Horowitz who says 75% of kids who go off the derech is because they were molested. And he's an expert in this. 75%. Why aren't we being machmer on the children's lives? Why are we being machmer on the muchach, on the thing?
There's a din of my causes.
Well, that's what the police are for. Let the police investigate.
Again, I don't know if the Chredish community has to give over to the police. And you go, you know, in every court case, you go to court in America, and I don't know if Israel's any better. It's like going to Las Vegas.
Now we're going to interview Rabbi Tzvi Gluck, who, as director of Amudim, has the most hands-on experience of anybody in the United States with Orthodox children who've experienced some type of abuse. We have on the phone with us, from Brooklyn, New York, one of the great young askanim of our generation, the founder of Amudim, Reb Tzvi Gluck. Welcome, Reb Tzvi.
Shalom Aleichem. How are you, Reb David?
Baruch Hashem. Could you tell us, what does Amudim do?
That's the magic question. Amudim does crisis intervention and case management in situations where people really have nowhere to turn. We have a primary focus on helping victims of sexual abuse and those suffering from addiction, as well as have other services that we help people with as well.
And start at the beginning. How did you get into, how did Amudim come about?
So this really goes back to when I was 19 years old, and two of my close friends passed away. One of them committed suicide, and one overdosed on drugs. And at that point, I started getting involved, as an individual, helping people. Obviously, being my father's son meant I was born into this business, Baruch Hashem. And after many years of doing things ad hoc, about a little bit over a year and a half ago, two close friends, Moshe Wolfson and Mendy Klein, sat me down and said, it's time to do something more formally. This business of just running around is not conducive to what we're trying to accomplish in Klal Yisrael. And they basically pushed me against the wall to start Amudim.
And so tell me, how did you start it? What does it do? What are its systems that you have in place? How many employees? Give us some, make it three-dimensional.
Okay, fine. So how it started was initially with three people, really just finding a way to manage cases of kids at risk, victims of abuse, and drug addicts and alcoholics. From there, we expanded. We currently have a full-time staff of 9, 5 of which are case managers. And what we do is we provide this everything but the direct service for victims, addicts, and families. So just to make it simply stated, if somebody comes to us that unfortunately their child was molested, so we will help them find an appropriate therapist to deal with the child. We will help the family find therapists to deal with them. Our case managers will be involved with them every step of the way. When there's law enforcement involved, we're going to help them communicate and do things in a very simple fashion where the victims don't have to relive the trauma of going over the abuse time and time again. If they then require specialty inpatient treatment, we'll help them find the appropriate program for that. So we'll really be there from when the person realizes that they need help and do a holistic approach to help the entire family get through this traumatic episode so that they can heal appropriately.
So let me ask you a few questions. We have had differing Rabbanim. There was the letter signed by 100 Rabbanim. Reb David Cohen called it the Hetemeir Rabbanim, allowing people to go directly to the police. And then we were going to have one after you, Rabbi Nachum Eisenstein from Eretz Yisrael, who says that it's usa to go to the police. And we had Reb Daniel Neustadt, who was sort of someplace in the middle. He was concerned about that the letter did not seem to have many guidelines, but it seemed to be a carte blanche.
So
I'm not asking you a halachic opinion, but experientially, how damaging is child molestation? Do you agree with these rabbanim? Not on a halachic basis, but just from a life experience basis. What, in your opinion, what has been your experience dealing with these cases?
I mean, I'll answer it with a small metaphor. As a paramedic in Hatzalah, I drive on Shabbos for what we call Safek B'Kuach Nefesh, right?
Right.
Klal Yisrael that I know of, personally Tzvi Gluck that Amudim has dealt with, has unfortunately 41 tragic deaths under the age of 30 since this past Rosh Hashanah, of which 17 of them we know for a fact were victims of sexual abuse.
So when you say deaths, were these suicides, murders? Like, what does that mean, 17 deaths?
Suicides and drug overdoses.
Of 17 children since Rosh Hashanah, and now we're in Tu B'Shvat, right? So it's,
right.
So it's around 6 months or so, right? 5 months. 17 suicides in 5 months because of sexual abuse.
That I know of. So to answer your question is, I'm not a Rav. I don't paskin. But if somebody steals money from somebody else, people have no problem running and saying, go to the police. But this is murder.
17 deaths in 17 5 deaths. Months? This is suicides? And how large of a community do you deal with?
So, I mean, on a regular basis, I would say about 30 to 40% of the people coming to us for help are from the New York metro area. And the rest of it are now spread out throughout the country and even Eretz Yisrael, Switzerland, England. I mean, we're getting calls from all over.
Now, I'm curious, is that number of suicide deaths because of, is that something endemic to the Orthodox community, to the Haredim, because there's such a stigma attached, or is that sort of indicative of the general population?
And the answer is, I don't know as far as the suicide rates, but the chief medical examiner of New York had asked me a while ago, how can they try to explain that every time that someone Jewish dies young, the family wants them to write aneurysm on the death certificate? When they do statistics, how is it possible that so many people in a small community all have aneurysms? So, you know, the answer is statistics are statistics that are never real because it's hard to answer. Sexual abuse, we know, affects all the communities equally.
Now, is it split between men and boys and girls equally?
I mean, what we're seeing is different than what the national statistics are, but the answer is yeah. I mean, we're dealing with boys that are being molested, girls being molested. On the suicides, it's pretty much, I think it might be one or two more boys than girls, but it's pretty much the same. The numbers are
so. When Reb David Cohn said that they have a din of a roidif, you would say that the statistics certainly seem to support his opinion.
They support his opinion 100%, and I would even say that even those that are alive, you know, that aren't dead, are dead inside until they get help. So there's so, I mean, dealing with victims of abuse and trying to get them to heal is the most difficult part of what we deal with, because literally we have people that are 35, 40 years old that are completely empty and dead from what happened to them when they were 9, 10, 11, and 12.
Now, is this because, and I know you're not a psychologist, but is this because in our community, Kedusha and Tahara and Snias are so accentuated, and is there perhaps more damage because of that, or is this just a human condition?
So it's funny, I actually discussed this exact question with David Polkowitz many times. We don't believe so. You know, we believe that it's just something that's really, it's a problem everywhere. However, we do find it, you know, the one area that we are having a big issue with, especially now that there are organizations doing awareness and programming, and I must bring this up, is that everybody's always talking about the rabbi, the bus driver, the coach that's the molester. Unfortunately, over 90% of the cases that we deal with occur in the person's own home. So while we're so busy with awareness and programming, we're forgetting that most of the people that this is happening to, we're not really reaching out to and trying to get them the help that they need.
So why aren't Rabbanim speaking more about this?
Well, unfortunately, the one that has been batting for our side for a long time left us this week. You know, I don't know. I wish we had more. It's a good question.
Wow.
It's a very good question. I mean, I'm sure you knew Rabbi Ronnie Greenwald?
Peripherally.
So he was one of the first people that came out publicly on this topic and went up against everybody.
Are you seeing attitudes changing among Rabbanim?
100%, but in a very, very interesting way. Whereas 5 years ago, Rabbanim would close their eyes and as if it didn't happen, they're already starting to have the conversation. They're still not where they need to be, but I can say that we're light years ahead of where we were when I first started getting involved in abuse issues, but we still have a long, long way to go. But there's definitely a change of attitude and acceptance that these problems really exist.
Now, Reb David Cohn was, in my opinion, when he spoke, he said, the Rabbanim who don't paskin this way are not aware, they're ignorant, they don't understand the damage, they don't understand the trauma, nor do they understand the life-threatening situations it creates. So he was really on the forefront of this.
I mean, not only that, but I use it as an educational message. There are many times that we have people come to us with cases, and we're starting to help them, and the family says, oh, our Rav doesn't want us to do A, B, C, and D. So we'll take that as an opportunity to sit with those Rabbanim and bring in a detective and a therapist and someone from the DA's office and slowly but surely educate the Rabbanim for them to realize, A, what the damage is psychologically, B, what the legal process really is. I mean, it's just not simply true that anyone can go to anyone and say, you did this, and have them arrested and destroy their life.
So talk about that, because you're going to have Rabbi Eisenstein in a few minutes get on the phone and speak about anybody could destroy anybody's life, and that the police are all vicious anti-Semites, and they're looking for the opportunity to hang a Jew by his toenails. Could you talk about that a little?
It couldn't be further from the truth. I mean, I am a chaplain with a few police departments. I'm a liaison here locally in New York City. I deal with the prison system. It's just not true. I mean, it's nice to say that because people like to make martyrs out of the few big-name cases. I can speak specifically about abuse because that's the topic we're talking about. When a victim comes forward and says something happened to them, and let's assume it's in therapy where the therapist is a mandated reporter, and the therapist reports it, the detectives that come to interview this victim are not from the local police station. These are specialized detectives from a unit. If the child is under a certain age, the child abuse squad. If they're over a certain age, they call it the sex crimes unit, depending on which city or county you're in, or special victims unit. They don't want to stigmatize young kids. And these detectives are investigators. They do forensic investigations. They have lines of questioning. And they know what they're looking for. And they know how difficult it is to really deal with this, and they know how to feel through what could be real, what can't be real, and even more so, even if something is real, will the victim be believable enough that an arrest should even be warranted? Because maybe if you make the arrest and then the victim doesn't come through, it's going to fall apart anyway. Then this goes to the, if they do feel there's enough information, it goes to the district attorney's office. Again, this is an investigative process. And the district attorney's office has both psychologists and the ADAs that are assigned to sex crimes are, again, specially trained, both in being lawyers, of course, and in being forensic investigators to know what to ask and to really go through it tooth and nail. They told me a staggering number. Less than 15% of all reported cases of sexual abuse actually lead to an arrest.
Less than 15% of reports actually lead to an arrest. That's a staggering number.
That's crazy. And of that, on the national level, less than 10% of that 15 actually lead to a conviction.
So 10 out of 15 means you're talking about really 1% of 1.5% of all cases reported lead to a conviction?
Correct.
That's a frighteningly low number.
But again, but remember that most of these cases occur in the home and family members won't report on family members. And if you're in a small minority community and, you know, let's say it's a clergy member or a teacher, you know, I can tell you cases that will make your hair stand up. I mean, I don't know how far I can go with this, but I said the story publicly a few years ago. A 14-year-old, 13-and-a-half-year-old boy was actually molested in a mikveh, in a prominent shul. And I found out about this about a year and a half, 2 years later. The boy was learning in Eretz Yisrael at that point, ran away, was already on the road to be not from. Long story short, I had reached out to the Rav because I found out that the Rav made this boy apologize to the older fellow that molested him. And I went to the Rav and I said, what's wrong with you? And he says, what do you mean? If the boy thinks he did something wrong, then he'll never go to the police. So we needed him to apologize so this younger man shouldn't go to jail.
It's a sick. It's just
I mean, you know,
it's
so
it's the hepach of everything Torah. It's like the hepach of Yashar. It's the hepach of Emes. It's the hepach of justice. It's the opposite of everything we're taught from Kita Aleph and on. It's the hepach of the ganze Torah. This Rav should be defrocked. They should give him a job in the sanitation department.
Nah, even that's too bakavadik. At least they do a good job.
So who are there any particular Rabbanim that, quote-unquote, are particularly unsensitive or sort of lead the charge against, you know, HaYosher V'HaToiv, Arayis in our community? They read the Parsha of Arayis on Yom Kippur by Mincha. There's no stronger statement of this from our Gedolim, from our Nevi'im, right? It's Mitama Nevi'im. Are there Rabbanim who are against it? Are there Rabbanim who are against what we're taught? Are there Kaifrim in the Torah? Do you have Rabbanim like that?
So, again, it's hard to, you know, the answer is I'm sure there are. But the way they view it is they come out with these, you know, they come out with these great terutzim. So at the end of the day, Reb Noach Isaac Albaum said it best. We spoke at an event together. And he gets up and he says, I personally believe everybody should go to the police. But because I know that people are going to want to go to a Rav so that they can look good in their community's eyes, I'll tell you, go to a Rav. But I'm going to add to that. If the Rav doesn't paskin go to the police, this is pekuach nefashis. You go to another Rav and another Rav and another Rav till you find the Rav that says you can go. On a case-by-case basis, you know, the Rabbanim always will tell you the same thing. And this is what they tell us and my staff on a regular basis. Of course, this, if it's really true, then the person should go. But how do we know it's true? You can destroy a guy's life over a false accusation, and you're taking a chance. And when I try to explain to these Rabbanim that these young children, you know, in certain, especially the children below a certain age, they don't know to make this stuff up. This is not like a kid who's, you know, saying, I want to get back at you and you have proof. People don't lie about being abuse victims. It's such an emotionally terrifying and traumatic thing that it's not something they lie about. And I tell it to these Rabbanim, and we have, you know, whether it's David Pelkowitz or Barry Horowitz or Dr. Zimmerman or any of the doctors, or when you hear David Mendel speak, I mean, everybody involved in this field says the same thing. And the Rabbanim, I don't know. I mean, listen, we're hoping we're going to see change faster than we are. We're just not there yet.
Do you find in any particular community less embrace towards the reality of what they go through?
So I would say in the, I'm going to use this word, I have to say this. I'm saying this L'tayelis. This is not, you know, I'm called a self-hating Jew often enough. I'm used to it already. But in the ultra, ultra Orthodox and in the Hasidic communities, where things are very tight-knit and, you know, focused around the figurehead and around a certain culture of support, we'll call it, we have the most difficult times breaking through to deal with these issues. And we're trying. I mean, we are trying. I sat with a Hasidic Rebbe this past week and over a case. I mean, we were discussing a case. And he looks at me and he goes, I know this is a big problem. We don't have a good solution. And I looked at him. I said, again, I'm not a Pesach. But if a person is doing this, shouldn't they be arrested? Shouldn't they at the very least be made media, people can protect themselves? I mean, something, you know, if a guy walks into a school with a loaded gun, nobody would think twice about killing the person. But here we're talking about...
It's an issue of loisamed al damriyecha. Mamish an issue of loisamed al damriyecha. Thank you so much, Reb Tzvi. I'd like to close with the interview we had with Reb David Cohen. And the reason I say this is because Reb Chaim Shmulevitz in Tovshin Lamed Aleph, Miami Yates, says something fascinating. He says that you're supposed to go to the gadol of that time, that place where you are, because nobody else really understands that problem. And he says the story, he brings a raya, he says, Chayni Amagel slept, everybody knows he slept for 70 years, and he came back to the Beis Medrash, and they laughed. They said, you can't be Chayni Amagel. That was two generations ago. And he said, I am. And it said, and Chayni Amagel was a big goyin, and in his time, he was the greatest Pesach. He used to answer all the questions. So Reb Chaim says, why didn't he just stand up in the Beis Medrash and answer all the shaylos? And they would know he was really chayni. So Reb Chaim Shmulevitz says, you know why? Because the terutzim that he had from two generations ago, they didn't fit that generation. Ein lecha ela hakayin shabayamim ahem. You have to be there. You have to be aware of that problem to paskin it. So let's go to the current, the Pesach of America, who's the Kohen Shabiyama Mahain, Reb David Cohen. These are excerpts from an interview with him, what he says to say about this topic. Let's go to the Pesach. Reb David, let me ask you a question that we really get a lot of this question in various forms by email. 100 Rabbanim, starting in Chicago, was under Rabbi First, came out with a psak that's saying that if somebody accuses somebody of molestation, a child accuses an adult of molestation, they should go to the police. There have been murmurs disagreeing, saying, no, you go to a rav. Tell us, what is halacha psuka in your opinion?
You leave out the word psuka. In my humble opinion, this manifesto is nothing new, because I've been paskening this for the last 20 years, let us say, as Rav Vogel, because a tremendous amount of shaylos would come my way. I know many rabbanim who just send it my way, and I paskin one should go to the authorities directly. I am very tolerant of people who will ask rabbanim. I am not tolerant of rabbanim who don't know how to eat this thing. You'll pardon put it in quotes. They don't know what molestation is all about, and that's why, perhaps, they feel that it's nothing.
Why isn't it a shaila of Masira?
For many, many reasons. Start with A. We are not allowed, let's forget a moment about being Moisa, someone, Lahariga. It's a Beferish Adina Shulchan Aruch, black and white. That a mitzvah is hatzibul.
Shin peches, right?
Yeah, shin peches and mechayshemish. But I think it may be siftes, but it's beferish. Mitzvah hatzibul. You give him over to the authorities not to kill him. Lani istati. We have no right bisman hazeh to be ma'anish someone. My opinion is that anyone who is guilty of molestation that's guilty by umdana. And incidentally, there's a Ramah that ketanim takanas hagoinim that ketanim anem on.
As on nashim, the Ramah nashim where there's no nashim nimtza.
Right,
that's the truth of the Shailum Eshev on it. Yeah.
But it's Ramah. So right. I'm not saying the Ramah goes for Gabi Hilchus Seidus. By us, Umdin is enough. If the Umdin is that what these children are saying is true, according to the Umdin, we have to not punish. We're not allowed to punish. But we have to be Matzil Hatzibur. So I believe that every molester should be given a life sentence. I believe that those Rabbonim that were always very lax and were against paskening, that a Metzarat Tziva should be given over to the authorities, it's simply because they didn't know what molestation meant. Can't justify what they did in any way if they would really know what a molestation does. That knowing what we know today, it's pasha that you go to the authorities. Rabbonim are not trained like psychologists. Even among psychologists, one needs special training in this area called molestation. So they, before when they have a case against the person, there is consultation. The person is given a fair chance to defend himself. But certainly. We have to give these a mitzari at Seber. This is the way we have to react. And why we are obligated to do so. And a person who doesn't do so is over an aveira called Leisamer al Dam Reyecha. There's no doubt in my mind.
So there you have it, folks. You have Rabbi Eisenstein's opinion, which he says going to court in America is like going to Las Vegas. You have Rabbi Gluck, who says he sees 3 suicides a month from abuse and molestation. And you heard Reb David Cohn, who says they should never be let out of jail. I just bring the guests to you, we have the psak of Reb David Cohn. Next week, we are going to have a fascinating program. We are going to have the director of the CRC, Rabbi Fishbein. He's going to be speaking about simchos, party planners and hechsherim, about using of simcha hall that does kosher and non-kosher. And we're also going to be speaking about the new genetically modified salmon, which is probably the biggest kashrus issue for the next generation. I look forward to speaking to you.